Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.
Oh, I'm Ryan Lambert from Yahoo.
Hey, I'm Sean McAnoo from The Athletic.
We did not work
and
out the order.
To Puck Soup 2.0, baby!
Off to a great start.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the fact that we're obviously all crammed into this pantry doing the show together. Oh, wait, that's right, we're not. Yeah, it's a new era for Puck Soup. Puck Soup 2.0, you're in it, as I say. With my buddies Ryan Lambert and Sean McIndoe, because I love you guys, and all I wanted to do was talk to you guys on a semi-weekly basis, and you were kind enough to jump into the soup, as it were, to do the show.
When do we meet Groucho and Harpo and Chico?
No, it's not duck soup.
Oh, Ryan. That's my mistake.
It's Puck Soup. It's
been I figured it was
soup.
Autocorrect or something.
No, if it was autocorrect, clearly it would have been Fuck Soup. And let me tell you right now, I've heard that there is a way that you can do it where you're sending someone a text message and you're trying to say fuck and it comes out as duck. And it's if you say you have to save one of your contacts as the word fuck and it will stop autocorrecting fuck in your text messages. That's what I discovered.
I'm not going to go to all that trouble.
I don't think there is. Okay, for those who don't know, Dave isn't doing the show anymore.
He died.
And he didn't die. He went back to his home planet. And that made me go and figure out a way to do the show in a way that would make me excited to do it. And the thing that would excite me to do it would be to do it with two really funny people that I enjoy talking to. And so, brief robot roll call. Sean, for those who don't know you, although I imagine that's impossible with this audience, who are you?
I am Dave Lozo's non-union Canadian equivalent. I've been around. You've probably seen me, even if you don't read my stuff or whatever, for about, I don't know, 10 years now. And started off kind of blogging on my own, eventually had a chance to go and do it in some other places. You may have seen me on a website called Grantland that ran for a couple of years and was pretty good. Mm. And I was the hockey guy there for a time. And I've been also in places like Sportsnet, The Hockey News, Vice Sports, and now at The Athletic, and as well as on Twitter and all the other usual places. So that's me, and I also used to host a podcast on the Vice Network called Biscuits. It was a hockey podcast. Mm. I can't remember who the co-host was, but it was also pretty good. So you may know me from there.
We came together late in this process, me and you, because I hesitated about asking you because you did Biscuits with Dave. And I felt like it was one of those weird, well, you know, I used to date her, but you're a pretty good dude, so maybe you can date her now kind of situations. But you jumped at the chance to do Puck Soup, and I can only imagine it's because part of the show is behind a paywall, so it still feels like The Athletic.
Exactly. Between The Athletic and having a book and this, my goal is to be as inaccessible to as many people as possible. I really feel like that's the right career move for me over the next little while.
Now, Ryan, you must be feeling like you're Will Smith in Men in Black, where you were on the last episode that Dave was on for Puck Soup.
Oh, that's true.
And you didn't know that you were being groomed.
That's right.
In that conversation to become my new partner. It's just like a Tommy Lee Jones, Will Smith, Men in Black situation.
Yeah, and I don't really want to have to jump off a bridge onto a double-decker bus, but no. That was part of it, so here I am.
Here you are. All right, so to break it down for you guys even more, it's going to be free bird rules for you wrestling fans out there, in which any one of us will tag in and out of the show. Sometimes it will be all three of us. sometimes it'll be me and Ryan, and sometimes it'll be me and Sean. And that's just going to be how it works, and it's going to be great. Also, the Patreon will continue to thrive. There will be mailbags every week, and then most likely Sean and I will do one of the bonus podcasts, and Ryan and I will do the other bonus podcast. And this is how it's going to work, and it's going to be great. And yeah, so that's it. New Puck Soup. I'm super excited that it came together the way it did. And I hope, you know, it's funny. Like I said, I was about to say, I hope you're happy, but fuck it. Like, anybody who didn't say Sean should do the show said Ryan should do the show. So you fucking people better be happy. That's all it is.
This is a real Avengers situation.
I'm just excited because one of my questions coming into the show is I wasn't sure if we were allowed to swear, and I feel like the first 2 minutes have firmly answered that for me. So I'm pretty excited.
Well, it's like I said to somebody the other day. They're like, "Why do you want to keep doing Puck Soup?" I'm like, "Well, you know, I have another podcast, but I can't call them the fucking Devils on that podcast, and sure, here I can freely do it when they lose 7-2 to the Leafs." And I'm going to pause on the Devils for a second. Like, I don't know how the hell they made the playoffs last year, because the team literally has two guys that can finish and they're both on the same line. And I've maybe never been wronger about a thing than I was wronger about, like, being happy they were drafting Pavel Zacha, because I thought that guy was going to be like at least a second line center in perpetuity. And if, like, he was worth a damn, he sure and Zacha would be a pretty good 1-2 punch, but he sucks.
Yeah.
I had somebody say the other day, congratulations, you know, on drafting what will eventually become the new Manny Malhotra, which is great in some ways if you need a Manny Malhotra, but sucks if you drafted him to be like your second line center.
That stings. That hurts. I'm stunned that a team with two good players and no goaltending is struggling. But yeah, they were. I don't watch a ton of the Devils because I have the choice to not do that. But I did watch obviously that Leafs game, and that was that was one of those games where I'm actually, as a Leaf fan, I'm worried that that game is going to screw up the Maple Leafs, because it was so. I mean, 7-2, a lot of times you go, oh, 7-2, but the score didn't really, like, that was a very 7-2 game. And I feel like this is the sort of thing where the Leafs are going to play a good team and just get trounced because they're still in Devils mode.
Well, as a Leaf fan, you better be worried more about your two best players strapping on tights, prancing around in the Nutcracker, being a bunch of fancy boys. Shouldn't you be more worried about that?
Yeah, a little bit. I know, like, everyone's like, oh, this is great, this is fun, and I was just sitting there going, like, man, I've been a Leaf fan for like 30 years, and I've just been waiting for the team to be good enough that other people couldn't make fun of them, and you know, it's finally here, and I'm like, yes, eat it, haters, and then, like, here's the two best players dressed up like, you know, Christmas elves dancing around,
and they were terrible.
You never saw Wendell in tights.
Were they?
You never saw Dougie in tights.
All I know is that Austin Matthews came out and did like the big like super windmill fist pump. So apparently the shoulder's okay. That's the one. Because like, Austin Matthews blowing out his shoulder while performing in the Nutcracker was pretty much the most on brand Maple Leafs thing of all time.
People in the audience were yelling "Plie!"
Yeah, it was weird to see at the end of the performance Austin Matthews carry Mitch Marner, because usually it's John Tavares carrying Mitch Marner. But
oh,
so
boy.
I digress.
Come on now.
Wait, is it something I said? Did I do something wrong? I have no problem with it, except for the fact that it wasn't so much a windmill fist pump. It looked like he was doing a full on Pete Townsend type deal during the performance in the Nutcracker.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, why I will admit I'm not really up on my Nutcracker, so I don't know if that's, like, the typical thing that character is told to do, or if they just, like, send them out there to freelance it. But I, because I honestly didn't know. Like, I heard they were going to be in the play, and I thought it was like a situation where like they were going to make a cameo, like, you know, some I don't know the knocker. It's a Christmas thing. Some little kid's like, oh, I want to meet a hockey player, and it's like, did someone say hockey player? Oh, look, it's Austin Matthews. I didn't think they were going to be wearing the Elves outfits with the curly shoes and, you know, all of that stuff. So good for them, because I'm the sort of person where, like, if you came up to me right now and you're like, here is $1 million to put on an elf suit and go dance around on a stage, I would be like, there's no way. So the fact that these two guys were like, ah, yeah, screw it, let's go do it. Good for them.
But, like, didn't you think they'd be nutcrackers, though? Like, if you hire a hockey player to be in your ballet, and there's a role in which all you have to do is stiffly stand there and do nothing, like, that would seem to be the perfect hockey player role in your ballet.
I mean, I think if you want to hire a nutcracker, you got to go Milan Lucic, right? I mean, that's he's got the experience there. But yeah, I don't know. Apparently, this is a thing. Like, I guess with this show, like, they just have guest stars come out and play, I'm assuming, the same role every time. I don't know. Hopefully, they don't get bit by the theater bug and decide that's what they want to do.
Mm. Well, yeah, you don't want that. Speaking of getting bit by the bug, Tom Wilson got bit by the fighting bug last night. As we do the show, it's the night after yet another Penguins-Capitals game. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. There's no fucking reason why these games shouldn't be on the actual NBC network. It's the best thing in hockey. It's the best rivalry in hockey. Every single game that they play, some weird shit happens and some dramatic shit happens. For example, last night you had a fight between Tom Wilson and Jamie Oleksiak 55 seconds into the game. And for the rest of the night, Matt Murray couldn't catch a puck and yet still won the game, which is pretty a remarkable thing if you think about it for a goaltender. But I wanted to pause on the Tom Wilson thing, because it is pretty fucking hilarious when you think about the idea that Jim Rutherford basically challenged Tom Wilson. Like, the general manager of the Penguins challenged Tom Wilson. In May, he talked about how Oleksiak challenged Wilson, and Wilson, quote, couldn't run quick enough to get away from him. So last night, they square up 55 seconds into the game, and Wilson drops him with one
punch.
Killed him. Yeah. So, yeah, congratulations, Jim Rutherford, for putting your own player in harm's way.
Well, I don't know if you guys saw this, but Tom Wilson was the subject of a documentary about how it's really not fair the way everybody talks about Tom Wilson.
Tell me more.
Like, the Washington Comcast affiliate put together a thing that was like Born to Play This Way or some shit like that. And it was like, from what I understand, I'm not joking. From what I understand, it was like a half hour documentary or something like that about, actually, the real victim here is Tom Wilson.
Tom Wilson, he was born this way. Gonna go and punch a guy. Gonna go and break his eye. It's my Lady Gaga tribute to Tom.
Yeah, we got it.
Sean, where are you on Tom Wilson? I'm not even sure where you stand on him. I know Lambert probably secretly likes him but doesn't like fighting anymore.
No. But he just sucks.
where are you on Tom Wilson?
You know what? I want to like Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson he's kind of that old school throwback to the era that I grew up loving hockey, and the he would have fit in perfectly in the old Norris division. And he's the sort of guy where, you know, periodically I find myself thinking, you know, if he was on my team, I'd be one of those crazy Capital fans who are always screaming about him. But then every couple of months or a couple of weeks or whatever it is, he goes out and hits somebody in the head or throws a dirty hit. And you go, oh, right, this is why we can't have Tom Wilson's in the league. And I'm fascinated by what's going to happen with this guy. Because I think the fact that he got the big long suspension and he came back and almost right away throws another questionable hit, didn't get suspended for that, fine. But it was pretty clear that, you know, he's not changing. And I think at some point, There's kind of one of two things that happens. Either he's going to throw another one of these hits and he's going to get the Rafi Torres treatment because the Department of Player Safety is just so sick of dealing with this guy and not being able to get through to them that they're going to hit him with this huge suspension. Or he has to radically change the way he plays, in which point he's not Tom Wilson anymore. Like, the ideal situation was he was going to come back, he was going to get the message. He was still going to be Tom Wilson, but he would go up to the line, but not go over it. And he wouldn't be, you know, he would be a guy who did things to help the Capitals win, but he wasn't dangerous to the other players, and he wasn't, you know, throwing dangerous hits. And I've kind of given up on that being a possibility. I feel like it's one or the other, and you know, I don't know which one you prefer. If you're the, you just signed this guy to this massive contract to be Tom Wilson. So if he goes out there and suddenly decides, yeah, I'm not going to hit anymore because I can't, because I don't know how to do it without getting suspended for 40 games, then that's not really what you paid for. But
he kind of seems like he's doing it anyway. Like, he seems like he's still the same guy. Like, it doesn't seem like the suspension
but
really
matters.
He's the
mattered. Same guy, like, who almost got, like, I mean, that hit from behind where they didn't suspend him, if he had been suspended, it was going to be another 20 games. Like, it was kind of one of those two things.
Now. They totally were just like, well, we would no, like, it was a, definitely a thing of they would have normally suspended him for it, but the fact that they were like, well, we'd have to give him like 45 games or something like that, they were like, actually that wasn't a suspendable hit, and that's fine.
You can't suspend Tom Wilson for two games now. Like,
no.
And the way, you know, just so people understand, the way that it works is, according to the Department of Player Safety, they look at, they don't consider your history when they're looking at whether to suspend you. The history only comes in when they've decided to suspend, and then it impacts the amount of games. So it kind of becomes this all or nothing thing, where if it's not a suspension, or if it's close enough to not a suspension that they can say it's not, then he gets nothing. But the next time, I mean, it's like, does anybody think he's going to make it through the next 50 games of the season and not at some point go high on somebody or late on somebody?
Yeah. Well, they do play the Penguins multiple times. I think the thing about it, though, is that, like, even if he does something that's a little bit less than what you'd consider to be the next huge suspension, they still have to give him probably enough games that it's going to bring it into the arbitration process anyway. Like, you can't give him five games now. And I think that's the real issue, that even if they wanted to give him a little nickel and dime slap on the wrist suspension, it still has to be, like, bigger than anything else they can hand out to anybody.
Yeah, because they said, like, it was on the one that got scaled back or whatever, they said it was like a multiplier for the previous three suspensions or something like that. So every subsequent suspension now, like, what are they going to be cubing it soon? You know, it's just one of those things of, they're just never going to suspend him again, because they know if they do, they're going to have to be like, oh, and you're out for the next 2 years.
At some point, he's
going to give them no choice, or it becomes like, was it like Matt Cook? I feel like after they really dropped the hammer on him, he came back and he stopped doing that stuff.
Well, I mean, he tried to kill Erik Karlsson.
Yeah. yes, that's right. Yeah, he did. There was that
CSI Ottawa,
but you know, he came back and behaved. But the problem was, Matt Cook behaving wasn't a good hockey player anymore, and there really wasn't a reason for
it. That's one of those things where it's like, yeah, maybe, but also he was like 34.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So there is that part. I mean, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe,
that's
Tom Wilson without the hitting, if, you know, maybe, you know, maybe Tom Wilson stops with the hitting and that lets him focus on, you know, the rest of his game, and he becomes a 30-goal scorer and we're all sitting here looking foolish afterwards. You know, maybe he's the, like, the Todd Bertuzzi, like the rare guy who actually does develop into the first line power forward relatively late into their career, but probably not, you know. And then, are you paying $5 million a year for a guy who's going to score 20 goals? And,
well, they're already doing that. Like, I don't,
they are, but they're,
by
paying,
the way,
they're paying that
20
for 20
is
goals plus.
Way overstating it. Like, yeah. I think his career high is now 14 or 15. Like,
well, he's been great this year, but I mean, that's the thing. They're paying $5 million for 20 goals plus 10 fights plus 10 big highlight reel hits that make everybody else always aware when he's on the ice.
And
if you take away that those last couple of categories, I don't know.
Where I agree with the Tom Wilson fans, and I try not to, is the fact that I think he is a top line forward. I've gone back and forth with people on this all the time about, like, the idea of, like, if you can play with Ovechkin and Kuznetsov and be effective doing it and not get yanked off that line at any point because you can't hang with them, you're a top line player. By definition, you're a top line player. Now, you know, statistically, I don't know if he's ever going to rise to what you'd expect from the contract, but I think he's a valuable player on that team, and I think he has something to contribute offensively. Now, let me say a thing about Tom Wilson fans. I've come up with a term for them. I believe they are Twaga fans. Tom Wilson,
yes,
a genuine angel. I have never seen a group of people more vigilant and psychotic. I've defended Tom Wilson and had people criticizing me for the way I've defended him. Like, these people are fucking nuts.
Yeah,
it's probably because he's a good looking guy, and it's probably because he's a capital, and these two things come together, and there's a lot of people that are just like psychotic about Tom Wilson. But my God, the Twaga fans, ladies and gentlemen, need to park it, because there are people that are on Tom Wilson's side, and we take shrapnel.
Yeah, no, like, from what I understand, he's also, like, a super nice guy, as long as you're not lined up across from him, right? Like, so, like, that leads to, because if he were a dipshit in the room or whatever, none of the media people would be defending him the way they do, right?
Right.
And so, it's the same thing with, like, Sean Thornton, where Sean Thornton left the Bruins and Joe McDonald wrote that thing. He's up there with Bobby Orr, Terry O'Reilly, Cam Neely, Ray Bourque. And it's like, oh, because he was nice to you? Right? Like, that's all it was.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with Tom Wilson. If Tom Wilson was a $35.5 million player who wasn't nice to the media would run him out of town. That's what the media does. And, you know, but he is nice to them. So they just go, we love Tom. He's so nice. And that's it.
I will say this when it comes to the Tom Wilson fans, and I will address them directly. I get it. I really do. I am a person who once got very, very angry and very, very defensive about Ty Domi elbowing Scott Niedermeyer in the head and feeling
son of a bitch.
And feeling like that was like everybody is just Ty Domi is not that kind of player. He's exactly that kind of player. He's literally that kind of player. But at the time, he was wearing my team's logo. So I was very, I remember at the time feeling like, you know, that's only because Niedermeyer just lay on the ice, and then as soon as the cameras were off, he hopped off the stretcher and he was fine. And this is all, you know, like the Devils were really concerned about fourth liner Ty Domi and wanted him out of the series. So I get it. I do get it. My only request to the Tom Wilson fans is please stop sending me screen grabs of his hits. Please stop. Like, if he hits a guy in the head, please stop sending me a screen grab from like three frames later and being like, there's no contact to the head. And it's like, dude, we have video now. We don't need to, the one with the late hit, where he hit the guy from behind late. And I had people, you know, cause somebody posted a GIF and I retweeted it, and people are like, that's been sped up. And it's like, so you're saying the hit was like, even later than it looks? Like that's your argument? Like
Jim Acosta in the press conference and speeding up his hand to hit the intern? Is that what we're talking
really
about?
It was exactly that. It was like a week after that. So that was like the argument. But it's like, it's a late hit. If the footage is sped up, that means the hit was even later than. So I'm just asking, Tom Wilson fans, I get it. Just as somebody who has been there, just take. Maybe before you hit send on the tweet, just take a moment and like, am I actually making the point that I think I'm making? And does this freeze frame of like from 5 seconds earlier in the shift where I've drawn arrows and circled things, is that really making my point any better? Or am I just maybe kind of seeming like a frothing maniac?
They really are one bad hit away from becoming QAnon people.
That's right. The Department of Player Safety is based in the back of a pizza store in DC where they're also trafficking children. The two things I'll say about this are, first, I will depend on you, the Puck Soup listener, to create Twaga hats. Tom Wilson,
genuine
angel.
No. You can't do that because they're indistinguishable from MAGA hats from more than 3 feet away, and you don't want a bunch of people, like, ironic MAGA hats are not.
Make these ones blue. It's fine.
Yeah. No, make them red, and then like you'd see somebody coming, and you'd be like, "Oh God, is he wearing a Twaga hat? Oh no, it's just a Trump fan." Okay, that's slightly better. slightly better chance of having a reasonable conversation with this person. Okay, I'll be all right.
And second of all, boys, as you know, the Capitals and Penguins will play again this season. And if you want to go see them play, there's really only one way to do it. And that's with our friends at SeatGeek. You know, getting tickets online can be very, very complicated. With hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability, it's hard to know hubba, 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 money, 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 who do you trust? That's why SeatGeek is the way to go. They put millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats that you want for a price you're willing to pay. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to ticket source for everything from sports to concerts to comedy to theater, where, in fact, boys, I just purchased two tickets to see Bryan Cranston himself in the stage play of Network, the 1970s classic film about the degradation of the news industry. I can tell you're impressed.
The whole time, they're just going to be like people in the audience going, they're talking about Trump!
Best of all, listeners to Puck Soup can get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's 10 bucks off. Just download the SeatGeek app today. Enter the promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P. That spells soup today. That's promo code SOUP for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. It's a good thing to have the tickets. You know who got a ticket out of town? Dave Hackstall. Wah, wah.
Now, yeah, nobody saw that coming. That's the crazy part.
We all saw it coming on Sunday because of that explosive report in the Courier Post in which Joel Quenneville was hired as the new Flyers coach.
Yeah, well, but that's not what it said, though. It said that the Flyers had made the decision to fire Dave Hackstall and to hire Joel Quenneville.
Didn't it say that it had happened? Didn't it say that Quenneville agreed to be the coach? And that it was going to happen in the next couple of days. I'm pretty sure it did.
I don't think that initial report did. I think probably a bunch of people saw that and were like, Joel Quenneville, new coach of the Flyers or whatever. But yeah, that's one of the, and I said it on Twitter, but it's like, yeah, I made the decision to give you $5 and you can give me $100. Like,
yeah. Yeah. So I really feel like, because I know a lot of people have jumped on that and they're like, you know, it was a bad report.
Hold on. Hold on. Let me, for the record, sources also indicated that Joel Quenneville, a three-time Stanley Cup champion with the Chicago Blackhawks, has been offered the position and will accept it.
Oh.
Okay, so.
But the sources indicated.
Right. In Dave Isaac's defense.
Well, that's not. That's,
but hold on. But in his defense, like. It's clearly the source is telling him this. It's not as if he's known for throwing shit. He's not Eklund. You know, right. He's not throwing shit against the wall and being like, Joel Quenneville, E4. It's obvious someone's given this information, probably somebody from Comcast. But and it could eventually be a situation where Joel Quenneville, through back channels, has been like, yeah, I'll totally become the coach of the Flyers. And then it does it someday, just not now. Yes. So the report, in essence, could be correct at some point. It's just right now it's not because the Flyers never even asked for permission to talk to Quenneville.
My rule of thumb whenever something like this happens is to try to figure out a way that the report actually was maybe more accurate than we think, even though it didn't end up matching the reality. And what I can see happening here is you've got this situation where the Flyers are saying we've never spoken to Joel Quenneville, we never asked permission. Well, if they haven't asked permission, then they're not allowed to speak to him, so they have to say they haven't spoken to him. But like you said, there are ways to get a message out to the coach. And I, you know, let's just say that the Flyers come back, they lose on Saturday night, they have that terrible game, the brain trust huddles together, they say, we've got to make a coaching change, and Chuck, reach out to Joel Quenneville, or maybe he already has, through whoever, you know, you talk to somebody, they talk to somebody, and the message comes back, yes, Joel Quenneville is interested, Joel Quenneville wants to be the next coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, great. At that point, they make the decision to fire Dave Hackstall and hire Joel Quenneville. But then the story leaks out. Somebody who's in that room or privy to those discussions leaks it out to the media. The story hits, and that fucks everything up. Because now...
Or perhaps the Flyers send interns to every bar in Chicago until they find Joel Quenneville. And they sit the intern next to him and have the intern be like, boy, the Flyers seem like a pretty good team, but they have a pretty lousy coach. Hey, what do you think? You think that's a team you'd like to coach someday, maybe? Yeah. And then you get the answer.
That's a possibility. But I could see they had reached out to Joel Quenneville. They say, we're going to make a coaching change. Do you want to be the next coach of the Flyers? He says, yes, I would be interested in that. They haven't, they can't formally offer it to him because they haven't talked to the Blackhawks yet, but they've got that kind of, he's interested, and maybe he's interested turns into he's accepted through the game of telephone in reporting this out. But, you know, he's interested because if that happens, then the question is, okay, what next? Is this now Joel Quenneville is going to be the next coach of the Flyers when he's done skiing for, you know, after the holidays and he's going to show up in January? Or is this a situation where maybe Joel Quenneville sees all this happen and goes, what kind of a shit show are you guys running there? And he calls back and says, you know what, I'm not that interested anymore because you guys apparently, I have one conversation with you and it's on the front page of the newspaper. I don't want to be a part of this anymore. And did they blow their chance at getting, you know, the best coach available on the market because somebody couldn't keep quiet about a story that was still in the process of developing?
All right, here's my
scenario. I'm going somewhere much
scenario.
More stable, like Florida.
Here's my scenario. Is they go, hey, you want to coach the Flyers? And he goes, yeah, but I'm collecting $6 million right now to be unemployed, so I'm just going to run this one out, and I'll see you guys in October. Like, who wouldn't do that? That sounds like an awesome, right. Like, he's just hanging out at Bears games or whatever, having a great time. Fuck it, he hasn't had time off in a decade. So, I don't blame him one bit if he wants to just take the season, because what's he going to do? He's going to miss the playoffs with this team. Right.
Okay. And if that had happened, what did they say with Scott Gordon? They said Scott Gordon's going to be our coach for
till the end
of the
season. Yeah.
So in theory, you know, if you're putting puzzle pieces together and you're looking for an answer other than some reporter just made something up, because that's not what credible reporters do. That's a scenario to me that starts looking like maybe it makes a little bit of sense.
I also like the idea that he's going to sit on his ass and collect $6 million, do not pass go, collect $6 million, and allow Chuck Fletcher to kind of take the scalpel out and figure out what the fuck to do with this team. Like, that's part of it, too. Like, why stand behind the bench of a losing team and play out the string and not make $6 million? Or you just let some other schmuck sit there for the rest of the year and then have Chuck Fletcher, you know, trade Wayne Simmons and do a bunch of other shit, you know, around the roster to make it a better team so when the conquering hero comes riding in on his shot ski, then he can take over a team that's a little bit closer to contention.
Yeah, the only argument I think there is, do you want to get in now, see what's there, and have some input into what those moves are going to be? Maybe you get there and you're like, hey, I love Wayne Simmons. I don't trade this guy and make sure you bring him back, or maybe not. And you have feedback like that, and you can actually have a hands-on approach to shaping the roster as opposed to just kind of parachuting in after they've already made changes.
Sean, remind me, when Burke went to Toronto, was it a situation where Wilson got hired before Burke did? Was that the situation there?
Yeah, Wilson was
one
hired
of them went there
Cliff
first,
Fletcher.
Right? Yeah.
And everybody assumed for the longest time, because that was that weird situation where in the summer, everybody was like, oh, they're going to hire Brian Burke. And then they didn't hire him. And then Burke recommitted to the Ducks, which lasted for a month into the season. And then he left Anaheim. And, he, you know, remember they decided, well, we've made the decision that Brian is going to step down and hand over the reins to Bob Murray. And even then he was like, no, I'm not going to Toronto. I'm taking some time off. And it was a week later he gets hired in Toronto. But yeah, Ron Wilson had already been in, and everybody just kind of assumed that there were, again, back channels and discussions taking place, because this stuff happens. You know, there's at a certain point, this is the kind of thing that sometimes teams figure out ways to do.
Yeah. I like the idea of there being a foggy night in Philadelphia and a trench coated Joel Quenneville is meeting with Chuck Fletcher.
Hands him a file. Slides it into his coat.
Here's what I want you to get for Wayne Simmons. Start with a backup goalie for Carter. It's perfect.
Which, by the way, the Carter Hart thing, very funny to me, because how great is it that a guy stops 20 of 22 and the whole city loses their fucking mind over it? It's like we've never had a 909 goalie in our entire lives. It's never happened.
Yeah. It reminded me a lot of the mania surrounding Sam Darnold when the Jets beat the Lions in like week two or three. And he had an, or maybe it was week one, like he had an amazing game. And I'm just like, guys, when has the quarterback thing ever worked out? Do you remember Chad Pennington? Do you remember any of this stuff? Browning, Nagel, any of this shit? Jets quarterbacks are akin to Flyers goaltenders. It's like great, great hopes that are dashed, and then you end up trading guys that should otherwise be the solution. So it's a sad state of affairs. But the Scott Gordon thing's interesting because Scott Gordon at one point was like a big old rising star in the coaching ranks. Then he took over the Islanders and just shit the bed. But couldn't you see a scenario where they like turn it around and challenge for a playoff spot now that they have average goaltending and Scott Gordon is like given a new contract and then gets fired 2 years later?
Yeah, I had someone ask me the other day, like, you know, oh, why do you think he Hextall was such a failure? And it's like, well, he got the Flyers into the playoffs 2 out of 3 seasons. Like, I don't know what else you really wanted out of this guy.
Yeah, I could see them turning it around, not because Scott Gordon comes in and fixes them, but just because this is the NHL and there's like 5 good teams and 5 bad teams and 21 teams that are completely random and we're flipping coins. We have no idea what's going to happen on any given night. I, you know, the Flyers run off a streak and get back in it, which would be hilarious if they do have this kind of secret deal with Joel Quenneville in their back pocket and, you know, Scott Gordon leads them into the playoffs and wins coach of the year, and then they still end up having to fire him to bring in Joel Quenneville or not, and they hand the reins over, and then that wouldn't go well.
You know, on a recent Puck Soup, I talked about how amazing it would be if Gary Bettman showed up at the NHL Awards dressed as Gritty, where the lad Gritty gave out the Hart Trophy and it ended up being Gary Bettman. Now I'm going to transfer that love to really wanting it to be like, you know, a random game during the season, maybe even the last game of the season. Yeah, that's it. The last home game of the season. Gritty's on the ice. He's doing his Gritty thing. Masks comes off. Joel Quenneville. How fucking incredible.
Incredible.
Would that reveal be? That would be insane. That's what
that
I want
be,
now.
That would be, that would be just about perfect.
Did they play the Flyers?
It happens after Gritty beats up the Chicago Blackhawks mascot. Mascot fighting championship, which is apparently a thing now. And then he
gets on the mic. He
unmasks.
Takes off the mask, gets on the mic, and says, "See you next year, Philadelphia." And everybody goes, "What the fuck?"
Just
and
the classic
the
end of Raw
goes,
moment.
Not most of you.
Sean, you brought up the assault on Tommy Hawk. Tommy Hawk, beloved Chicago Blackhawks mascot, was assaulted by a fan after a recent game. Last thing I saw, there was no arrest or anything for this, but what the fuck?
Hey, what? You're right. The fan started it. The fan
jumped him.
The mascot finished it. Do not mess with I saw somebody was tweeting. They're like, these mascots, like you wouldn't think, you know, the guys who do this are like really good athletes and they have to be to do all this stuff and don't try to fight a mascot. So I get a lesson learned. I mean, if the next time like Spartacat comes over and sprays me with silly string or whatever, I'm not doing anything. I'm just staying in my seat. I'm not making eye contact. I don't want any of that because that guy got dummied by Tommy Hawk.
Especially because, you know, Spartacat's probably working for less than minimum wage working for Melnick. So, you know,
exactly.
He's already pretty salty.
Under the table.
Yeah, he's pretty. I mean, I might be able to take him because he's probably like malnourished and, you know, isn't, but working 18-hour days because he's also like the VP of ticket sales or something.
Yeah, seeing that scene was scary. Like, it kind of made me wonder why that hasn't happened more often. Like, you know, on NBCSN for some reason on NBCSN last night, they replayed the McTavish-Harvey the Hound thing in the context of the Santa Claus fight at the Islander-Ranger game. I don't know why, but it reminded me of, like, how weird it is that we don't have more mascot assaults in this league, only because mascots are constantly pulling shenanigans. And some of them have very punchable faces. Like I mentioned, I think on ESPN on Ice, Finn the Whale seems delightful, seems very cuddly. I'd love to punch that nose. It's just there. It's just there to be punched.
You know, honestly, when Gritty dumped an entire trash bag of popcorn on a Rangers fan in like his second game ever, the fact that that Rangers fan didn't just wail on him, like, I was like, wow, Gritty just has this powerful energy about him and nobody is going to mess with him.
The thing with Gritty is, like, because, you know, he's doing all this stuff and it's hilarious, but he, I mean, you already know that at some point he's going to do something that is going to be, and he's either going to go too far or he's going to do something that isn't too far, but somebody's going to make it into a thing where he went too far, and we're suddenly going to have this national conversation about Gritty. And
Gritty's going to get canceled.
Yeah, well, it's 100%. This is how Gritty ends. It's one of two ways. It's either, you know, he's going to dump popcorn on the wrong person and it's going to turn into a thing, or it'll be like Greg says, and the league will be like, oh, this guy's popular. Let's do something funny with him at the NHL Awards. And he's going to be in like 8 different segments and they're just all going to die. And it's and at the end of it, we're all going to look at each other and be like, Gritty's not cool anymore. And he's going to have to go back to his home planet and that'll be it.
Or he's gonna like shoot an ice girl on the ass with a t-shirt gun, and they won't know how to handle it like TSN handled that one time where they shot a t-shirt candidate. Didn't they do that? Was it like Jeff O'Neill or somebody? Or Marty Biron or somebody shot like a t-shirt candidate, some woman on the set during trade deadline?
Yeah,
or something?
No, Jennifer Hedger got the t-shirt cannon right in the gut, and then the next year they switched it around and let her get the payback.
Yeah, the Flyers don't have that kind of nuance, but no, it's funny. Let me mention this here because I don't think it'll ever come together on for a story. I was working on a piece about how other mascots felt about Gritty, but I couldn't get enough of them to talk about it.
It wouldn't go on the record.
Well, it wasn't even it wasn't even a sense of them not going on the record. Like, a lot of them just didn't want to speak about it. But I talked to a couple of them off the record that would have been in the story about just like. They're all kind of bitter because he's basically doing all of their old bits, but because he's got big Google eyes and he looks like a giant, you know, sentient nectarine, like, people are really into it. And they're all kind of like, I did that popcorn bit 5 years ago. Oh, congratulations. Checking a Santa on the ice. Never seen that before. Like, they're all really fucking salty about Gritty getting all this. Like, there's part of them, from what I gathered through my extensive conversations with mascots, there's a part of them that loves the fact that mascots are now in the zeitgeist, and, you know, the NHL mascots are being talked about on, like, John Oliver and shit like that. And then there's a part of them that's just like, you know, the old magician's code of, like, you know, this trick, my God, you know, Doug Henning used to do this trick back in the 80s kind of feeling. So it's an interesting dynamic within the mascot community when it comes to Gritty.
My God, I would love to read that. We need, like, an anonymous tip line where any mascots out there can...
I got one extensively, but I couldn't get anybody else, and I tried. Boy, did I try. Went undercover into the Mascots Union. Who are you? I'm the Capital City Goofball. What do you think about Gritty? And nobody would speak to me.
You
got to
watch the All-Star Game where they get all the mascots out there and see how they treat them. Like, see if they're like, yeah. Hey, you know what would be fun, Gritty? Why don't you go jump through that flaming hoop like the Anaheim Ducks guy? Go do that. Why don't you let us suspend you in the air like the San Jose Sharks guy? Oh, are you stuck? Oh, too bad. Okay.
Sean, you know there's no fire allowed in the All-Star game, as Johnny Gaudreau found out.
You're right.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right. They did. They took the fire out.
Predictions for the Flyers. Will they make the playoffs?
No.
Okay.
Like, they're a mile out of it, and they're not going to get better goaltending than they've already gotten, probably.
Of course they are. You don't think Carter Hart's going to be better than fucking Neuwirth and Elliott and Stolarz and all these other guys?
Okay, so, like, how? First of all, not hard, right? Like, he's going to be like a 905 goalie below league average or whatever, and that's not going to, like, he would need to go 920 to get this team back into the playoff picture. I think he's good. I think, you know, he got off to that bad start in the AHL or whatever, and it's an aberration or it's a learning curve thing or whatever. But it's just one of those things where it's like, unless he's going to stand on his head, this team is just, you know, doesn't seem to have the horses to make up the gap that they have given themselves, basically.
I like I said, I could see them getting better. I could see them going on a bit of a run, but they're, if I'm looking at it right, they're 8 points back, and they got a lot of teams to pass. So
yeah.
I mean, it would. That's just. I know it's the NHL, and we're supposed to pretend that you know that's not a big gap, and you could totally make up. I mean, it's. I just think it's too much. The hole is too big right now.
They make the playoffs. They give Scott Gordon an extension. Joel Quenneville ends up the coach of the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we all thought anyway, right? Wow. Like, this whole time?
That's the official prediction. They'll fuck it up. They'll fuck it up by being good, which is such a Flyers thing to do.
Yes.
Do you think there's any chance Quenneville ends up back in St. Louis?
You know, it's funny. I did a radio hit there yesterday, and of course the first question was, hey, toasted ravioli, Provol pizza, we have nothing else going on. What do you think of Quenneville and the Blues? And I'm like, that's a good question. And they bought up, because I hadn't thought about this, they bought up the idea of, would the Chicago Blackhawks allow Quenneville to go to the Blues if he's still under contract?
Yeah, and that's, I don't know. I mean, have we ever had that situation where a team has, like long-term? I know there may have been, there's been situations where a guy's working in the front office and they say, no, you can't talk to him. But has there ever been a guy who's sitting at home?
Well, didn't the Penguins not allow Bilsma to leave at one point or something like that? I remember there being some situation along those lines where they were kind of holding him hostage because he was still under contract.
Well,
yeah, I feel like you could have it, like if it was during the season or something. Yeah, I could see maybe saying no. You know, we might play you guys in the playoffs. We don't want somebody who is working, but to just like out of spite prevent a guy. But you're right. I mean, if you were ever going to, that would be the situation to do it when you got a division rival.
The thing that I find weird, though, like, is the thing I find weird, though, is that, like, you know, if you don't let Joel Quenneville coach where he wants to coach, right? This man won you 3 Stanley Cups. Like, I know it's already kind of a weird. I know the relationship between him and Bowman is frosty to begin with. Could you imagine the giant fuck you to a guy where you fire him,
yeah,
and he's trying to get you out of having to pay him $6 million a season, and you there'd still won't
huge,
let him go?
Huge outcry. Like, there would be a massive. That would really turn into a thing, which would make it tough on the Blackhawks when they need to hire their next coach, like a year from now. So,
what were you gonna say, Ryan?
I was gonna say Chicago would just let him do it just because they want to get out from under that money, right? Because he has 2 years left, right? This year and next.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. like. Oh, yeah, I'd love to not have to give this guy $6 million. I don't care if he plays for a division rival that isn't that good. So,
yeah,
like, first of all, the idea that either of these teams is going to meet each other in the playoffs, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just doesn't seem particularly likely. But, yeah, I don't think that they'd do that just for a million.
We should touch on the Blues. We should touch on the Blues for a second, and probably the Kings as well as the two sort of open for business teams right now. What, first of all, if you're the Blues, like I wrote about this on Friday, like the idea of trading Tarasenko at first seems like it's fucking bonkers until you realize that could be an absolute bounty and maybe get you the center that you really need. And what are you doing with this guy anyway? Like, there's a part of me that thinks that it makes sense to trade Tarasenko as long as they're comfortable with the idea that he's going to go someplace, get a center, and score 50. Like, that's going to be the thing that happens. But
yeah.
You could end up getting a real bounty for him.
Yeah, for sure. And it's one of those things of, like you said, like, what's he sticking around for? He's, what, 27? 26? Something like that. And he's going to play for this, like, I think he's under contract for 4 seasons or something like that. So you're going to pay this guy till he's 31, I think 7.5 against the cap. And then, what, are you going to maybe make the playoffs 2 of those years? Like, mm-hmm. get out from under that contract, and, like, you can get probably first-round pick, good prospect, and a roster player, even if you don't get, you know,
you can get a
second-line center. Yeah, you'd get a ton.
Yeah. And I'm fascinated with this, and I do a weekly power ranking. I do a top 5, bottom 5, and I have the Blues in the bottom 5. And, like, every week... Every single week, I'm like, just here's the latest trade rumors from St. Louis. And Blues fans are like, dude, we have other things going on. Like, you can write about something other than the latest
Yeah, they gave Robert Bertuzzo that 3-year deal.
Yeah, exactly.
But, they're open for business. Like, no, they're open for business, but you have to take Robert Bertuzzo's inexplicable 3-year contract.
But I just, you know, anyone who's followed my stuff over the years knows I'm constantly complaining about the timid GMs who don't trade, and you know, even you know, you look at the like even with the Kings, like, oh, we're open for business, just not Doughty, not Kopitar. Probably not Jonathan Quick. Okay, so you know, all the good assets that people might actually want are off the shelf. So are you really open for business? The Blues are that one team that seems to be like, yeah, open for business means open for business. Make us an offer on anybody. And you know, do you move a guy like Tarasenko? I mean, every other GM in the league knocks that possibility out right away. They it's a non-starter. That you move any of these guys, and then you rebuild by trading all your crappy assets that nobody wants and you don't get much for. That's kind of the blueprint most teams seem to follow. I love the fact that there's a team that is maybe willing to actually make some of these deals and maybe even make some hockey deals. Like, if they trade Tarasenko, I'm not sure that they're necessarily doing it for first-round picks and prospects. I think they might want to, you know, certainly get younger and cheaper, but do it something that at least approached being more of a hockey trade than just a sell-off for assets. And those are great. Those are so much fun. They used to happen all the time. They never happen anymore. And Doug Armstrong strikes me as one of the few guys who, you know, maybe feels like he's been around long enough that he can actually go and do something like that and not just be like a timid, typical GM who hides under his desk and doesn't pick up the phone.
You ready? Mm-hmm. Tarasenko for Draisaitl.
Boy, oh boy. Boy, oh boy.
Oh, yeah!
So you're not getting cheaper, but you are getting younger. And Tarasenko, yeah, geez, you talked about him scoring 50 with a center. Put him with the
That's a fucking
oh, my God.
Deity.
But can you imagine the Edmonton media take on Tarasenko, though? Like, the second he doesn't back
check. Oh, God, I forgot about the Yakupov factor. Yeah, shit, you're right.
That's not going to happen.
Oh, man. Why couldn't he be from Markham?
You know, Lucic would pick him up at the airport or something, and that would immediately become like that. That ride home from the airport would become the transformative.
That only adds
experience to
Lucic's value in everybody up there's opinion. That just is just another example of why Lucic is actually really worth that contract.
Exactly, like that. Tarasenko would walk into the room as a selfish, self-absorbed Russian, and then Lucic would come over and sprinkle some of that winter dust over the top of his head and transform him into a battle-hardened warrior who would lead the Oilers to the promised land, by which I mean the wild card.
Yeah, in this scenario, Hitchcock is still the coach of the Oilers when Tarasenko goes there?
Yeah. Poor Vlad. Oh, no.
Oh, that would be fun.
Oh, let's make this happen. Wherever Tarasenko ends up, boys, he's going to need a lot of things. You need a roof over his head and a place to lay down for sleepy time. And the best place to get one of those is Lisa Mattresses, a proud sponsor of the Puck Soup Podcast. You know, a quality night's sleep helps you recover from distractions faster and prevent burnout and make better decisions, improve your memory, and overall make fewer mistakes. It's not marketing. This is science. And Lisa has designed a better mattress to give you a quality night's sleep, leveraging 30-plus years of experience and hundreds of hours of scientific testing to develop the perfect mattress for all body shapes, thank you, and sizes and sleeping styles. Lisa's mission is to provide a better night's rest for everybody. Through their 1-10 program, they donate one mattress for every 10 they sell. That's more than 31,000 mattresses and counting. Lisa strives to leave the world a better place than where they found it, but that doesn't stop with the mattress donations. Together with the Arbor Day Foundation, Lisa plants one tree for every mattress they sell as well. The Lisa mattress is the thing where if I lay down in it, I don't want to get up. That's a tribute to how good the mattress is and also to my own sloth. Give yourself the gift of a better night's rest this holiday. Get $160 off a Lisa mattress at lisa.com. That's LEESA.com/soup. And then use the promo code soup, S-O-U-P, at checkout. That's LEESA.com/soup, promo code soup. The new Men in Black movie trailer dropped before we did the podcast today. Men in Black International, which is not Men in Black 4, and is not a Men in Black movie that will feature Will Smith in theory, because he's busy being a not blue genie in Aladdin.
He says he's blue. In the movie, he says he's blue.
But why didn't they make him blue for all of the publicity shit then? It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, why did they make this movie? There's a lot of questions we could be asking here. It looks terrible. Well,
it's like if they advertised Avatar and it was Zoe Saldana with a giant stick and a fucking ping pong ball on top of it before the special effects were done. The trippiest thing this year for me, or one of them, was when me and Ruby took my daughter to Disney World. We went to Animal Kingdom, where they have like an Avatar land, which is understandable because the movie made a lot of money and whatever. But like, the lines for those Avatar rides are longer than anything else in the fucking park. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's one of the, like, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there are people who have been like on Avatar message boards or whatever who are like, I'm so sad that I'm not living on Pandora that I'm like clinically depressed. I'm not joking.
They live every day hoping to wake up as a Navi.
They just want some unobtainium, Greg. Is that so wrong?
They want to go in that tanning bed that Sam Worthington, a.k.a. Sean Avery, went inside of, and they show up as a Navi somewhere on Pandora. It's true. Men in Black International trailer, Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth. It's great that Chris Hemsworth gets to be in a Men in Black reboot, while Liam Hemsworth had to be in an Independence Day sequel that was done 20 years after the first one, which, for the record, both me and Lambert really liked when we saw it.
I don't think that's an accurate representation of my of my feelings about that movie.
I remember seeing it, and we didn't like it. I thought it was,
I didn't like
didn't
it. No,
it
I thought it was terrible, and like not right. in a fun way.
Okay. Well, I don't think I really liked it either all that much in hindsight. But Men in Black International, Emma Thompson looks great, almost like she's playing David Bowie, and then also Liam Neeson's in it apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your hopes and dreams for this movie, boys?
I hope Tom Hiddleston and Taika Waititi can show up at some point in this film and really just make it a backdoor. Men in Black is a Marvel movie, right? So, in theory, this could be a backdoor MCU film.
You just want it to be Men in Black Ragnarok.
Yeah. You got half the cast already, so...
Sean,
I should just throw out the disclaimer for people who are listening. I know nothing about pop culture. I am completely useless in these discussions. To bring it back to a hockey equivalent, I am not good at both ends of the ice when it comes to what this podcast does. So you're going to hear me go quiet as evidenced by the fact that you guys were talking about Avatar, which is a movie that made like $2 billion. And I had no idea what you were talking about. I didn't get any of those references. I've never seen the movie. I've seen like 6 movies in the last decade. So Have you ever heard that Jim Gaffigan bit where he's talking about like seeing the movie Heat and trying to talk to people about it? And they're like, that came out 16 years ago. And he's like, yeah, let's talk about it now. My pop culture is basically like a handful of movies, pro wrestling, video games, and like old like Amiga computer games from the 1980s. So that's
it's like 80% of what we talk about.
Yeah, you guys are going to be like, well, what's up with Game of Thrones? And I'm going to be like, Bard's Tale 2 was weird, right? Like, you guys remember that. So it's I did watch the trailer. I was very excited when Greg said we're going to be talking about a trailer because I can watch trailers. I can do that. And so I invested the 2 minutes, and it was I liked the trailer. And then I had to go on Wikipedia and try to figure out why all the characters were different from the original Men in Black, which is the only one I saw 20 years ago. And I think my only memory is the rap song from it. So it thumbs up for me, but I have a sneaking suspicion I'm not the intended audience for this one.
Now, it's the second time we've brought up music with regards to Men in Black. And I have to say, the thing I liked most about this trailer is, maybe 10, 12 years later, someone finding a reason for Fergie's London Bridge to exist. Because that was a pretty great song to have in this trailer.
Slow down. Come on.
I think it's going to be fun. Like, Tessa Thompson is probably one of my favorite working actors right now.
She's great.
She's awesome in everything. It's going to be fun to see her maybe cut a little like we saw her in Ragnarok, like you said, like she cut loose in that movie and she was super funny. So that part of it's interesting. And the fact I didn't realize that she was going to kind of be your Will Smith audience surrogate character here. So that's kind of fun too. And Chris Hemsworth is like legit funny as well. So I have some really high hopes for this. But at the end of the day, like, I don't know, man, like Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones had a very specific kind of chemistry, and those movies had a very specific kind of Barry Sonnenfeld vibe to them that I really liked. Even like the second one was a mess. The third one was actually quite good. So I'll miss that kind of playfulness, I think, in this, but I might find other reasons to love it. Who knows?
Yeah, as with a lot of movies these days, I think it'll be watchable, but you won't think about it 5 seconds after you've seen it.
Disposable.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they go, hey, you remember that thing you liked 20 years ago? Well, we made the same movie. Because it's the same thing of, like, she's like, well, I've never done any of this. And he's like, oh, I press that button and the car goes the thing. And it's like, yeah, no, we know. We all saw the original Men in Black. Like, I don't know. I don't have anything. I saw, like, I looked it up the other day. I saw, like, 110 movies in theaters this year. So.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
In fairness, you were a MoviePass guy.
Well, now I'm AMC A-list because MoviePass locked me out of every theater near my house by being the worst. But, yeah, no, I saw, like, 110 movies this year. And, you know, like, I'll see almost anything. You have to try really hard. For me, like, and I'll be happy to see all.
Did you
anything.
See God? Did you see Gotti?
Of course, I saw Gotti. Yeah, one of the worst movies I've ever seen. In my life. Oh my god! So there's my friend Matt wrote this thing about how weird and bad Gotti is, and the example they give there that is just like I didn't catch it in the theater, but because they were writing about. The movie, they watched it a bunch of times or whatever, and there's one part of the movie where Travolta, as John Gotti, is supposed to say, are you sure? And he goes, are you sharp? and that really is, like, the perfect encapsulation of that movie. Also, Stacey Keach does a thing where he's like, New York City. You got the Bronx, Manhattan, Queens, Staten Island, Brooklyn. And it's like, yeah, no, we all, like, they all live in New York. They know that. You don't have to name them all. It's
two things there. First of all, I'm sitting here legitimately trying to figure out if I've seen 110 movies in my entire life. And I'm not into theaters. Like, that's, I'm trying to work out the averages. I don't. Think I have, but the great thing about being like a pop culture outcast is I haven't heard of these things, which means I get to hear about them for the first time, and I didn't know what Gotti was, and then I heard Ryan say, you know, blah blah blah, and then John Travolta as John Gotti, and I almost choked on my coffee because I was like, wait, that is a thing that happened.
So this movie was development hell. No, not at all.
No,
it's
the
entire pop culture segment of this podcast is now going to be these guys explaining.
I'm happy for that to be the case because so Gotti was.
It's like having a friend that was in a coma, but you haven't been in a coma. So this is very exciting. Coma.
I'm your yeah.
So Gotti is based on the life of the guy John Gotti, based on a book written by his son who had a lot of creative input. In the making of this film. So the central thesis of the film is that John Gotti, the guy who ordered and probably committed a lot of murders and other crimes, was actually a really nice guy, and it was the federal government and snitches who were the bad guys in all this. And it was directed by E from Entourage. It was lit by E from Entourage, I'm assuming. Like, the lighting in this movie is bizarre. And it really does seem like every single take was, we took it once and that's it.
Right.
Not just Yashorp, but also, you know, just the line reads in this film are insane. And at the end of the movie, as John Gotti's dying, there's Travolta in...
Spoiler.
There's Travolta in old age makeup. Travolta now is older than John Gotti was when he died. Like, it is a... Oh, and that this is the other thing. Pitbull, heavily involved in the music of this film, to the point where they are in a club, and, like, a Pitbull song comes on, and everybody's having a good time. And then you realize this scene is taking place in the 1980s. Like, I could go on about how bad this movie is all day. It's on Amazon streaming right now. Set aside 2 hours to watch this phenomenal piece of shit. It's incredible.
It's like if Jewel sponsored something the two ways in the 80s. You're like, no, man. Everybody in the scene, they're not doing coke. They're vaping. They're like, what?
Yeah, that's right.
It's the 1980s. And you're like, no. Seriously, it's going to be great. They're like, that's how cool they are. They're vaping 25 years before anyone vapes. It's great.
It's an inexplicable film, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
I'm going to go see this movie, and B, I feel like there's a bit here where just Ryan makes up a fake movie and explains it to me, and we see how long it takes me to realize, like, where I'm like, nah, you had me until E from Entourage was the director.
I couldn't make up Yashorp. I really couldn't.
Oh, man.
I would never think of that.
All right, that's it. That's going to be number 111 on my list of Lifetime movies.
It's streaming on Amazon Prime though, right now.
It's a really underrated year for Entourage revivalism because E directed
Aquaman,
a movie that tanked, and they made an Aquaman movie that's going to be huge. Like, what a weird Twilight Zone version of the Entourage universe.
Will it make as much money adjusted for inflation as the Aquaman in Entourage? Because at the time, that was the highest grossing film of all time.
Yeah, that was the highest grossing movie of all time in the Entourage movie. Boy, that's a good question. No, I actually think it's going to make less than Wonder Woman domestically.
Yeah, I agree.
Internationally, 100%. It's going to do more, but I think it makes less than Wonder Woman domestically. But it looks like it's going to be fun, and I'm down for Aqua Bro. I don't mind it. I think that Jason Momoa is really really fun. Like when he's flying around in Justice League, and he's like, "My man," it's great.
Yeah, he's a very enthusiastic, charismatic guy. So he's a real change of pace from everybody else in every other DC movie. But also, like, I don't know, these movies, generally speaking, are bad. So,
are you saying that I lacked charisma when I was chasing down the scum of Gotham?
Yeah, I am saying that, oh, okay. Batman.
Now,
are you saying that I lacked charisma when I was chasing down Batman?
Yeah, I am saying it, Bane.
So,
are you just going to ask me?
We mentioned
now Two-Face.
We mentioned Gotti. Speaking of things from the 80s, the Hartford Whalers are coming back on December 23rd in the guise of the Carolina Hurricanes as the Hartford Whalers. Sean, you're telling me before that we started taping today that the people of Carolina are not so cool with this idea?
Well, this is something that I've kind of learned lately because anyone who knows me knows I'm fully aboard with this this idea. The idea of like bringing back something from the 80s and early 90s is right up my alley, and I love the idea of them going out there in the old uniforms, and you know, earlier in the year when they were doing their vote for their goal song, and Brass Bonanza was one of the options, and I was like, you got to do Brass Bonanza, you got a course, and I had somebody in Carolina reach out to me, and they were like, dude, please don't do this, because we're not, like, this isn't a fun thing for us. This is a fun thing for everybody else that we have to go along with to show that we're good sports. But, you know, like, people in Carolina aren't nostalgic for the Hartford Whalers. This is all, you know, this is everybody else. Now, I'm not saying everybody feels this way. I'm sure there's lots of people who are fine with it, and I'm sure they're gonna make it fun so that, you know, when the night comes and goes, it'll be, you know, it'll end up being kind of a cool, fun thing that they did. But I found it interesting because this person made, like, a convincing argument that this is something that is really more for everybody else, not as much for Hurricanes fans. And I think, as some evidence that they might be onto something, the fact that they're doing this twice this year, once this weekend in Carolina, and then later in the season for a game that's in Boston. Yeah, they're not breaking it out again at home. They're going into Boston wearing the Whalers uniforms so that all the Boston fans can be like, oh, yeah, I remember these guys. So I don't know. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's still fun. And, I want to see it, and I hope they really lean into it, play Whaler Mania on the scoreboard, brass bonanza, do the whole thing. But I will say, I do find it kind of funny that this is like a Tom Dundon thing where he's embracing the history of the franchise in the same year that he fired Ron Francis, the most popular and successful player they've ever had. It's kind of like, it's a bit of a balancing act. Like, we got the uniforms and the song, but we did part ways with the greatest player ever on less than ideal terms.
Yeah, and I was looking at the like press release for Whalers Heritage Night, and I'm not seeing like a lot of names that would really speak to me as having been like primo memorable Whalers, like Mike Rogers, who I guess had 100 points in each of the franchise's first two seasons and was the captain in 80-81, is dropping the ceremonial puck. But like, whither Kevin Dineen? Where be Jeff Sanderson? Where are all of the Whale that we loved?
That's Whalers' heritage, is that there are no primo Whaler,
right?
Like, Keith Primo played for the Whalers, and even he wasn't a primo Whaler. So there's that, you know, I mean, it's Ray Ferraro and Zarly Zalapsky, who, you know, can't be there, and you go down the list. There's the guys you name. Like, it's not a long list of
Mike Liute. You know, there's a bunch of guys. Look, I agree with you that there aren't like a lot of great Whalers, but there's a lot of. Oh, Jesus God Almighty. I'm not trying to be a guy who's like, you know, curmudgeonly, like, don't say Merry Christmas guys or whatever, but like, ending your coaching interviews in game with Mike Sullivan and Todd Reirden last night, where he wishes Mike Sullivan a Merry Christmas during the game, and he wishes Todd Reirden Happy Holidays. By the way, is that just McGuire looking at the last name Sullivan being like, that guy's definitely a guy who celebrates Christmas, then looking at Todd Reirden being like, I don't know for sure if this guy celebrates Christmas.
Might be
like,
a thing.
Why does he get happy holidays? Anyway, I just thought it sucked, is the point. You don't need to end in-game fucking interviews by saying Merry Christmas. You're pretend to be a fucking journalist for 2 seconds.
If anybody's not aware of the Hartford Current story about Pierre McGuire getting fired as the Whalers coach, like, look that shit up. It is insanely mean. It's so good.
Yeah, they hated him.
It's terrific.
It is one of the great great stories ever. And the fact that, like, if you read that story at the time, if you were like, yeah, 25 years later, he's still, you know, a prominent hockey figure, you would not, because, I mean, that was a attempted burial at a level that you don't usually see from this league.
But to go back to your point, though, Sean, about who is this for, I mean, they are doing some kind of an in-game auction with some game-worn jerseys that are going to benefit a learn-to-play program in Connecticut, which is great. But, like, you know, if the Carolina fans are all like, I don't care about this, this is not our team, and who gives a shit about the Whalers, and the Hartford fans are like, I don't care about this, this isn't our team, who gives a shit about the Whalers, like, who is this for exactly? For us to be able to see?
It's for neutrals to buy a fucking hat. Like, that's all it is.
Yeah, it's got to be, right?
Yeah, it's cynical cash grab, in much the same way that they go, oh, remember the 1920 Bruins, yeah, that's what the Winter Classic jersey is or whatever. Nobody comes up with a good third jersey design in this league. They just go, what was a thing old people like? What can we sell to baby boomers?
Yeah. But the thing is, usually it's like, you know, when it's like the Jets are going to wear their old uniforms, there's people in Winnipeg like, yeah, I remember those. There's nobody in Carolina who's like, I'll tell you, if you really want to do this and, you know, and really steer into it, play the game in Hartford. Give up one home.
That's what I've been saying. An arena. That's what I've been saying forever.
And go.
Well, they
and play
still
there.
Have. They still have an AHL arena that seats like 10,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
That's going to be a comfortable attendance number for a Carolina Hurricanes game anyway.
Exactly. So, you know, do it there, and then maybe you actually loop in like a part of the fan base, because I got to imagine there's probably not a lot of people in Hartford who are still like following the Hurricanes, but maybe you loop them back in. Steer into the skid if you're gonna go that way. I still 100%. Like it. To me, it's fun. If there's fans in Carolina who think it's fun, then I'm not trying to tell anyone they're wrong. I just found it interesting that like I kind of had this blind spot to the fact that there might be people in Carolina who are kind of rolling their eyes at this, going like, oh,
yeah, because it really is just saying, hey, the last 20 years and all the like fan culture you've built up or whatever, fuck you. We don't give a shit about that. We want to sell some throwback jerseys, baby.
Yep.
At the end of the day, I'm pretty sure this is just a giant ruse to try to get Joel Quenneville to show up for a Whalers reunion. And then they're going to drug him and keep him there and make him the coach.
Yeah, they'll black bag him for sure.
That's at least... black bag him. There you go. I don't want to get inside this van. Get inside the van. It's a Whalers reunion. Why are you putting that thing over my face? To knock you out. Shut up. So Christmas is coming up, and we asked the Puck Soup listeners about what they would give some of their favorite teams or least favorite teams or least favorite people for Christmas in the NHL, such as Jiggy Jules, who writes in, cooking lessons for Jamie Benn so he never has to eat out again. There it is.
Got him.
Nathan writes in, Tom Wilson... he'd give him a get-out-of-jail-free card for suspensions. Probably only use that once, I imagine. Puck Latino writes in, a Christmas special Broadway musical featuring the Carolina Hurricanes goal celebrations and players chatting and warm-ups for Brian Burke. So do it for Berkey. Colon, the musical. Marissa would like to see a Stanley Cup for Henrik Lundqvist. Now that, friends, would be a Christmas miracle, I think, at this point. distinct kicking motion. Great name. Give Milan Lucic exactly one goal and watch Chiarelli use that to justify keeping him around for the rest of the contract. Man, I can't believe Chiarelli's going to work out. Like, Hitchcock's going to save his job, and he's going to be there for like 3 or 4 more years now. It's going to be fucking crazy.
Yeah. By the way, Milan Lucic, 2 goals in calendar year 2018.
Mm-hmm. So far, the year's not over.
Right. Could you imagine being able to go back in time, though, on January 1st, 2018, and you could make someone a bet... Corey Schneider wins versus Milan Lucic goals, and what that bet would have turned out being.
Oh, shit.
God.
Really like 1996 Devils era scoreline there.
Yeah. Jesus. Alex Zanari writes in an 8.5 over 8 year contract to Jeff Skinner to stay on Jack Eichel's wing into all a good night. Guess we should mention at this point the Patrick Berglund thing, which was fucking weird. I guess he lost his smile and gave up $13 million to leave Buffalo. They weren't really playing him the same minutes that he had in St. Louis. It was the first time he had ever not been a St. Louis Blue, which I'm sure was probably affecting him personally. Weird deal, but boy, does that help them out from a cap perspective to cancel that contract.
Man. But yeah, I like how in this guy's fantasy, he's like, I'm going to give this guy $8 million.
8.5. Oh yeah, his Christmas gift was 8.5. Is six like over $64 billion to somebody?
Right.
Is what he'd like to do. It's a lot of charity.
In my fantasy, if I'm a Sabres fan, I'm like, oh, he takes like 5.5 hometown discount. Like for me, Oh, as a Buffalo Sabres fan, I want to give this guy a league max deal. What are you doing?
Right. I think it's the acknowledgement that that guy's not taking a fucking cent under 8.5 to stay in Buffalo.
Oh, no,
is that acknowledgement? Adam Lichtman writes in, I'd give Taylor Hall a Taylor Ham pork roll sandwich because it's the only good thing about being in Jersey right now. True.
They got to trade him, right?
We'll talk about – we don't have time to talk about that, but I have some views on that. I have some views on that, but I appreciate the sentiment. All right, fucking. I don't think it's a Tarasenko deal necessarily. I think he brings more to the team than Tarasenko. But the complete lack of anything beyond fucking two goal scorers in that forward group gives me pause and makes me think it's plausible. I also wonder if he's going to stay.
Well, that's what I'm more talking about is the fact that he's just gonna pull the shoot on this. Like, he's got a year left after this one, and like, are you gonna go through all of next season going, Taylor Hall's probably leaving, right? Like, just fucking trade him.
You ready?
You'll get a ton for it. You'll get more than St. Louis will get for Tarasenko because he's cheaper.
You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? Taylor Hall for Leon Draisaitl.
Poor Taylor Hall. Oh, this kid can't catch a break.
Matt Painter writes in, Bettman getting cheered just once, just so he knows how it feels and makes him feel worse every time, other time he's booed. He was cheered in Winnipeg, if memory serves, was
he
the
was,
one time
he
got cheered, right?
Yeah, he brought them the team, so.
Yeah. See, he has felt the warming of a cheer. Finally, Ryan, not Lambert, but RJ022 writes in, can I give Gritty a lump of coal? So now look at that, boys. We're at the end of December, and now it's starting to be heel turns on Gritty all of a sudden.
That lasted a month longer than I thought it would. So,
yeah, we are really getting to the – by January, we're just going to be sick of him, I think.
Mm-hmm. All right. Did you guys ever get any Christmas presents worth a damn that were hockey-related? Because when I was a kid, I'll say this, when I was a kid, the two hockey things that I would get with some regularity was my dad would give me Devil's tickets in my stocking, because much like everybody else in New Jersey, we didn't really go to games until after December, and that's when the attendance picked up. And then I also used to ask for hockey starting lineup figures was my big thing when I was a kid. I was a big fan of starting lineup figures overall, but the hockey ones I thought were pretty cool, especially the goalies, because you could take their masks off, which I thought was a really cool thing.
My thing was I did get tickets, which was a big deal in Toronto to get like the one time that your dad's company could get you tickets to go see a game. My thing, and I'm giving away my age more than I might like to here, VHS tapes, like hockey tapes, and I my dad has got me the latest Don Cherry Rock'em Sock'em every year.
There it is.
since the very first one came out when I was a kid, that was a thing. Like, you'd get Christmas would be over, you'd pack up the wrapping paper off the floor and everything, and then like the hockey fans would settle down and watch the latest Rock'em Sock'em. But even that, even when it wasn't that, like, I used to love getting like blooper videos or like Hockey the Lighter Side. There used to be this whole industry where every year they put out these videos, they'd last half an hour, but they'd just be these wonderful like things. John Davidson would always be involved for some reason, and the beautiful thing is most of these things you can find them on YouTube now, so you can go back and I'm amazed at the number of times where I'll go back and like find something on YouTube and instantly I'll be like, I know exactly what's going to happen, I know what hits they're going to show, I know what the jokes are going to be. And that stuff is stuck in my mind. I can't remember what color my own wife's eyes are, but I can remember exactly what, like, John Davidson's goaltending school, how that skit's going to go. So there may be something.
You know, a lot of people have lamented the fact that ever since I stopped doing the podcast with Merrick, there hasn't been that American-Canadian dynamic on this podcast. I think we're getting it back, because I just realized that your Rock'em Sock'em tapes were probably my Hess truck as a kid.
Greg, I got
my
Hess
dad would get
too.
Me a new
wow.
Hess Oil, Sean, gas company, would sell a Hess truck every Christmas. That was a new style of truck. Sometimes it'd be a truck, sometimes it'd be a camper, sometimes like an ATV or something. My dad would buy me the new Hess truck every Christmas. So my Hess truck, a truck who cost like $30 just because you could flip a thing and the lights come on, was your Rock'em Sock'em Blood Knuckle 5. And that's fantastic.
There you go. I mean, I think I come out the winner in that deal, but I'm willing to accept it.
Lambert, did you get any Christmas the hockey shit for Christmas?
Yeah, tickets, just like you guys. And I think probably the ones I got the most mileage out of was, you know, the Genesis NHL games, right? 94, 95. Yeah. I probably got them up to like 97, at which point they became PlayStation games, and I had enough money to buy them myself. But yeah, that was always like, you know, get that game, sprint to the Genesis, and play for a few hours until we went over my uncle's house, which is the move.
So yeah, there it is. All right, that's Pucksy for this week. I love my new friends. I hope that you did too. We'll start doing bonus stuff again in January.
If you didn't,
no, you always want to hear about it. You got the you have Yahoo comments. Come on, you know you love that shit. But Sean doesn't want to hear that shit because he's on The Athletic and all he hears is happy sunshine about everything he writes.
Wonderful, so nice.
This I didn't realize that this could be as good as it was. My cancer was cured by this article.
Yeah, best is worth it for your
best $2.99 to exactly. $6.99 I've ever spent, depending on when I got in. Yeah, we're gonna start the bonus content again in January, like I said on the Patreon free month for everybody this month because it got all fucked up. But if you're listening to this and you aren't subscribed to the Patreon, go to the Patreon. I think it's patreon.com/pucksoup to sign up. $5 a month to get you 6 bonus things. Or if you just dig the show, you can kick us a buck. There's going to be new and exciting things also added to the Patreon in short order. And yeah, that's it. Next week, we'll be back for a little year in review action. And you can find my shit at Wyszynski on Twitter. You can find my shit at ESPN.com. Now that Sean's on, we might as well mention we wrote a book with Lozo called The 100 Greatest Players of All Time and Other Stuff. You can find it on Amazon as an ebook. And yeah, that's my stuff. Sean, where can people find your shit?
You can find me at The Athletic. I got a piece this week that was a lot of fun where I look back at the 100-plus years of the NHL never having a playoff format that made any sense. I know people complain about it these days, but it's never made sense. It's literally 100 years of them not being able to get this right. So you can check that out. And I also have a book that is out, The Down Goes Brown History of the NHL. I don't know if it's... If you got Amazon Prime, you could probably still hook it up as a Christmas gift, or if you wanted to give somebody the ebook or the audiobook, if you've enjoyed listening to me talk for the last hour and you'd like 8 more hours of that, you can listen to me read the book over audio, or when you get those Amazon gift cards in your stocking from somebody who didn't think of you until the last minute, now you know what you can do with it.
And Ryan, I'm on Yahoo. And don't look at my Twitter or anything. Don't email me. And I think that's probably it. Subscribe to the Patreon.
There you go. Patreon? Patreon?
Probably Patreon now that you say that, but I don't know.
Like a patron.
Yeah, right. But I've heard
the patron saint of podcasts. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Love you, boys, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Pucksoup.